The American Chemical Society presents Men and Molecules, the story of chemical research. This is your narrator, Joel Holt. This week, Men and Molecules features physician Robert Becker in a program entitled Of Bones, Stress, and Electricity. Here's a riddle. What's our best support is rarely seen and lasts for a lifetime. The answer, of course, as you can tell from the title of this program, is bones. The whole machinery of our body by which we breathe, think, play, and work would be useless if there wasn't a frame, a skeleton of bones to hang it on. But simply having a skeleton isn't enough. Each bone has to be the right size and shape for its particular job. A finger bone has to be quite different from a leg bone, for example. Why the differences? Part of the answer is heredity. Stocky parents tend to have stocky children, and so on. But bones are also being torn down and built up throughout our lifetime. What controls their size and shape and keeps them growing straight? Most scientists think it's the strain or pressure that's put on them. For instance, the weight that a leg bone has to support.
The mechanical stress, the fact that as you stand up and walk, if you weigh 150 pounds, each leg supports 150 pounds each time you take a step. It has to do this efficiently, otherwise we fall down, otherwise we break them. See? Bone is capable of growing and remodeling itself in such a fashion as to be best able to resist the stresses that are applied to it. One of the best examples is in children or people under the age of 25 or 30 who have a fracture, and let's say the fracture is put together with a slight angle to it. Where the bone was supposed to have been straight, it is slightly bent. It will grow straight in time by a process of growing new bone in addition to what grew at the time of the fracture. New, mature bone will grow on the concave surface, and the bone on a convex surface, which is no longer required, will gradually disappear. We were concerned with how is this done, what are the signals that make the bone do this.
That was the voice of Dr. Robert Becker, who is Associate Chief of Staff for Research at the Veterans Administration Hospital in Syracuse, New York, and Professor of Surgery at the State University of New York's Upstate Medical Center. A physician, Dr. Becker is also a basic researcher who's trying to get the answer to the question he just posed. How does the stress on a bone control its straight growth? Obviously, there are different kinds of stress, not just the weight put on a leg bone.
Now, you must think of the fact that every time you use a muscle, every time you make a fist or hold an object, you don't have to pick up a weight, but the fact that you used muscle power, the muscles are anchored in the bones and are stressing the bones as they are in use, so that you have a variety of stresses, and those are also mechanical stresses too, obviously.
Dr. Becker hit upon an answer to his question indirectly. At the time, he was studying how the new growth or regeneration of body tissue other than bone is controlled by electrical signals from the nervous system. Well, bones don't have nerves, so he wondered if perhaps the growth of new bone might be controlled by electrical signals originating in the bones themselves. Here he is to tell that part of the story.
We had determined before in company with others that the regeneration growth response in other animals was related to the central nervous system. And since it was related to the electrical properties of the central nervous system, if bone lacked nerves, then it must have its own electrical properties because it displays regeneration. When you heal a fracture, your ski fracture, for example, you actually are regrowing part of the bone that's missing. You're making a new part. So our first study was aimed at very simply bending bone and attempting to detect the electrical responses that came from it. And we were able to do this. And this material was published and was done in conjunction with my colleague, Dr. Bassett from Columbia University.
Dr. Becker's bone bending experiments verified his hunch. The strain of bending did produce electricity, and the amount and direction of the electrical current did depend on the amount and direction of the bending. So obviously, mechanical stress was translated into electrical language. But how? The answer should be in the structure of the bone, its chemical makeup. And Dr. Becker knew that the matrix or framework of bone had two major ingredients, bricks and cement, if you will. The bricks being crystals of a very hard mineral called apatite, and the cement, a tough body protein called collagen.
These are arranged in a highly specific, highly organized fashion at the molecular level. We determined that both of these materials were semiconductors in their own right. albeit not very efficient semiconductors, but that the combination of the two materials in a specific molecular arrangement produced a specific type of a semiconducting device known as a PN junction diode.
A PN junction diode is nothing more than a simplified version of a transistor, the tiny device that replaced bulky vacuum tubes, made possible miniature radios, portable television, and Earth satellites. Because transistors and junction diodes are combinations of different solids, they're called solid-state devices. And their important role is to convert sound waves or stress or other kinds of energy into electricity and to control the direction of this electrical current. Since, according to Dr. Becker, bone is a mass of junction diodes, it must use diodes to turn stresses into electrical current.
Now, we know that PN junction diodes are stress-sensitive, and we also know that upon stress, they will produce a unidirectional electrical current. So this seemed to confirm what we had found before. We then assumed that the signal resulting from the mechanical stress was electrical in nature, that it was proportional to the important parameters of the mechanical stress, and that it was produced by these solid-state properties of the bone matrix itself. Now, the next question to answer is, how does this produce bone growth?
A good first guess is that the electrical signals produced by the stress on a bone affect the body's bone-making cells, specifically the so-called osteoblasts that produce the collagen cement.
It makes collagen fibers. It squirts them out into the environment. At this point, we found that the precursor molecule of the collagen fiber, with the tropocollagen, which is made by the cell, is a rather unique molecule in its electrical properties. And it responds to this minute electrical field that is set up in such a fashion as to migrate and align itself precisely where you would want it to go as a result of the electrical field. So it appears as though we have now a complete closed loop feedback system in which the final output, for example, the electrical current produces these two factors, cellular growth and migration and alignment of the collagen fibers to produce bone in the area where it's needed. As it does so, it counteracts the mechanical stress, and this is your negative feedback portion of this system.
So Dr. Becker now has a complete picture, a closed loop, for the growth of normal bones. It starts with a strain or stress on a bone, walking, a muscle pulling on an arm, and so on. By means of a unique feature of bone structure, a junction diode, this stress is translated into electrical language that not only quickens the activity of the bone-making cells, but also tells them where to put the new bone. The result is a relief of the original strain, dimming the electrical current and dampening the bone-making cells. Of course, this isn't the complete answer to bone growth. For instance, Dr. Becker notes that it doesn't completely apply to broken bones.
This only applies to the response of bone to mechanical stress. That's all. Now, if you wish to extend this to fracture healing, you would say that there are two parts of fracture healing. The first part is an automatic process which is triggered by some factor in the fracture itself. This results in a mass of bone that is not organized in relationship to the rest of the bone at the fracture site. The second phase of the fracture healing is a reorganization of this mass of bone to trim away with the parts that are unnecessary and to firm up and make more compact the parts that were there originally. This part of fracture healing is the same thing that we have been describing. This is a response to the mechanical stress of the environment.
Dr. Becker is a physician, as I mentioned earlier, a surgeon to be more specific. And although his work on growth is labeled basic research, it might someday have direct medical benefits. For instance, there's the intriguing possibility that new bone could be induced to grow to replace a missing arm or a leg. That dream is still a long way off, but Dr. Becker has gotten some encouragement with in vivo experiments, that is, tests with live animals.
Now, we found that when one would take an in vivo experiment, a dog, which was what was used, and implant a device that would produce a very small amount of electrical current, direct current, that one could produce in the animal osteoblastic proliferation of cells at the negative electrode and no corresponding proliferation at the positive electrode. Now, this work was done, again, in collaboration with Dr. Bassett at Columbia.
Dr. Becker's work may be more important to another sort of bone problem, specifically children who have very fragile bones or bones that are too heavy or misshapen.
These children will have as many as 90 or 100 fractures before they reach the age of puberty. They'll heal quite well, but they're still extremely fragile, the bones. The etiology of both of these diseases is completely unknown at this time. And we expect to start looking for this from this point of view, from the point of view of what is the solid-state property in this matrix. Is it normal? Is it abnormal? And can it be related to abnormalities in the trace element composition? We have a thesis on this that we've just begun to explore. And this thesis would say that since the function of the system in bone appears to be very dependent upon an appropriate and proper semiconducting system in the matrix. This is the collagen-appetite relationship. One should find diseases, clinical entities, in which there is a disturbance in this situation. Now, you can change the properties of a semiconductor very simply and very easily with a very small amount of a different trace element. This is how you make, we've got 5,000 types of transistors on the market now. They're all based on one or two basic matrices, and they're all different primarily because of what they call a doping process. This is whether you have one part per billion of indium or one part per billion of arsenic or something of this nature. Now, obviously, you can transfer this analogy to biological materials quite easily if you can start out at the basic point that the biological substrate, the material itself, is also a semiconductor. We're beginning, have begun already, a study of the trace elements in bone, and we're finding some rather interesting things in this regard. Hopefully, we will extend this to some of the diseases. There are a wide variety of bone diseases, the etiology, the causative factors of which are completely unknown. Histologically, you look at those bones and they look reasonably normal. You look at them chemically, they have collagen and they have appetite and they have the right numbers of cells and so forth, but still something is wrong with those bones. You can think of situations in which the bone is much more fragile than normal. And converse situations in which the bone is much thicker, heavier, and so forth than normal. Both of these could well possibly be due to disturbances in the semiconducting matrix that give abnormal signals, so that the pattern that develops then is not going to be normal. The function of this part is not going to be normal. But this is still in its infancy, this aspect of the study.
This week on Men and Molecules, you've heard Dr. Robert Becker of the Veterans Administration Hospital, Syracuse, New York, and the State University of New York Upstate Medical Center describe the mechanics of bone growth in a program entitled Of Bones, Stress, and Electricity. If you'd like a transcript of this week's broadcast, please write for transcript number 321 to the American Chemical Society, 733 3rd Avenue, New York, New York, 117. That's transcript number 321, American Chemical Society, 733 3rd Avenue, New York, New York, 117. In addition, Men and Molecules has been made available in book form by Crown Publishers and can be purchased through your local bookstore. This is your narrator, Joel Holt, reminding you to listen in again when this station and the American Chemical Society present another broadcast of Men and Molecules.